Hi, everyone, and welcome to the first episode of 2022 for a brand new Behind the Numbers show, Reimagining Retail, an e-marketer podcast made possible by Smartly.io. I'm one of your co-hosts, Insider Intelligence Principal Analyst Susie David Canyon.
And I'm your other co-host, Principal Analyst Andrew Lipsman. Today is Wednesday, January 19th, and you're listening to the new bi-weekly retail show that will talk about how retail is colliding with every part of our lives, from the emergent world of retail media to shopping on social media to the relationship between in-store and online shopping and more.
And on today's episode, in the first half, we'll be talking about all things sustainability.
And in the second half of the show, we'll be ranking the most under-the-radar trends for 2022, plus a couple of overhyped trends.
So let's get things started on today's episode with the first segment about sustainability.
So Susie, we just released at the end of 2021 our report looking at the top five retail trends for 2022. We've talked about a handful of them on this show and a couple of industry webinars. And one of them that we haven't dived into yet is on sustainability. What are your thoughts on how sustainability is starting to affect the world of retail?
Well, I think it's something that we were talking about from a long, long time ago. If you think about how Starbucks has so many stores that have LED lighting, but it's definitely come to the forefront in terms of the entire ecosystem from delivery and packaging in the last 18 months to 2 years. I think those images, I don't know if you remember them, of the canal in Venice and the dolphins swimming after everybody sort of halted their way of life and stayed home. And all of a sudden the animals were coming out and the pollution was better. I think that's really changed the game. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing it everywhere. We're hearing about it everywhere. There's, I think, a rising need for corporations to demonstrate responsibility with, you know, the climate and sustainability at the forefront of that. My question for you is really, how important is it really, right? We have, in some cases, corporations being accused of greenwashing and basically talking a big game, but maybe not really committing themselves to this. On the other side of things, you know, there's maybe a really emerging segment of consumers, particularly younger consumers and Gen Z and millennials, that really do care about this. How important actually is it?
So I'm glad you asked that question because I think you're right. There are so many buzzwords that are being thrown around, like even climate commitment and, like you said, greenwashing. Even upcycling now is the new buzzword when it comes to sustainability. But you're right. It is. There are numbers that are telling us that people care more about this. In May 2021, Stifel and Morning Consult did a survey, and they found that 71% of U.S. adults ages 18 to 55 care more about product sustainability now than they did a year ago. So definitely there are numbers showing us that consumers care. The other question behind that, though, is like, you might care, but are you going to put more money behind your values, right? That's the hard part. How do we make sure that retailers understand that it's important to consumers and show that that is a value that they're aligned with without it costing so much more money that consumers all of a sudden don't want to do it?
Right. I think most people value sustainability and being climate friendly, all else equal. But often it isn't all else equal. It comes with a higher price tag. So to what extent are consumers actually willing to pay more to make sure that products meet those needs? And maybe more specifically, how do they even know, right? I mean, that to me is a really critical question, is that there are so many aspects to being environmentally friendly, from the supply chain to, you know, store that the product may be merchandised in. I mean, there's just so many different aspects. How do you account for all of that?
Well, I think there are so many different aspects, and consumers only hear about and know about either what the retailer brand is telling them or what the media is telling them, right? And I think as a legacy brand, especially in the CPG world, it's that much harder. And Heinz just did this whole new ketchup bottle that's less plastic and used a QR code to try and gamify the idea around less plastic and what they've done and to try and call attention to what they're doing. So it's almost like they're skirting the issue of using less plastic. But in the end, they're telling you that that's what they're doing and it's good for the environment. So I do think as a new brand, it's easier, right? Because that's your value proposition from the beginning. And pricing is not something that consumers realize the difference, right? You were always that price. You didn't change because all of a sudden now you're using sustainably harvested fabrics, right? But it's for the legacy brands. I think for them, that's the big challenge.
I think you're also rightly pointing to the fact that corporations, in many cases, have to lead this change. Now, many of them are being propelled to do this because consumers care. So just by virtue of a consumer saying that they care, even if they don't know how to quantify or understand, you know, the impact on carbon footprint or things of that nature, just the fact that they do is causing corporations to commit themselves to reduce packaging waste and all these things. And these are real commitments on, you know, in some cases, fairly aggressive timelines, 5 years, you know, for some really big changes over a 10-year horizon. But that's one trend that I'm seeing that I think is really encouraging, is that consumer brands and then the retailers themselves, Walmart is one example, they're really leaning on consumer packaged goods providers to significantly reduce waste and make sure that a higher percentage of their material is recyclable.
Absolutely. And well, this is the other thing, that there are so many different numbers going around. And especially as we talk about respondents and consumer surveys, a recent study that I thought was really interesting when it comes to consumer behavior was a Simon Kusher and Partners with Dentsu that found that 87% of respondents would be willing to change the products and brands that they use to make their own lives more environmentally friendly. Now, I think, as we had said, there is corporate responsibility in how retailers are marketing what their efforts are. But then on the other hand, we're seeing that people want to make choices that they feel good about. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is interesting to think about. And I maybe want to turn it back on you and ask, can you think of any products where you have changed the brand that you buy or what you're consuming in order to specifically be more environmentally friendly?
That's a really good question. No, I feel like I grew up in a very environmentally friendly environment and like family life. And like my dad composted before it was a big deal. So I think that most of the choices I make to begin with are that. But the world is just making it so much easier because now they're telling me this is good. That said, it's not like I'm checking to see where my jeans were made. Country, yes, but not where they were made in terms of how much water they use. So that, I don't know that I'll ever take that effort. But if you marketed to me that you're using 2/3 less water, then yes, I would absolutely buy these jeans instead of the other ones. What about you? Have you noticed?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I think you're hitting on a key point, which is that in the cases where it kind of nibbles around the margins, right, it may not be enough to incentivize you to make that significant change. Like you, in my household, we, you know, recycle and compost. But I'm thinking about consumer products. And I guess the only one that I could say is we've made a conscious effort to eat less meat, which maybe takes us to more, you know, plant-based brands. But that's not a huge, huge change, but it's something. And I guess from my standpoint, the reason why we would be doing that is because, you know, that is one of the biggest polluters, is the meat industry. But, you know, when I think about kind of normal household consumer products, I can't really think of other clear examples where we've made that shift.
I definitely have not yet, but I have been doing a lot of reading in terms of the reusable packages, which is big in the beauty industry. That's something I'm thinking about. Like, how do I switch up some of my tried and true products that I think a lot of people will agree that once you found that product that's your it product, it's really hard to turn to a different one. So like, how am I going to go ahead and turn to a different one because it's more environmentally friendly? Like, that's the leap I need to make now.
So I think where we're kind of netting out on this is that there's a real consumer desire. This isn't an edge case now. I think it's gone pretty mainstream that most people would like to do this. And the challenge is really in how to make that change tangible and actionable for the average person in material ways, enough that they feel like they're making a big enough difference that they'll actually change their behavior.
Absolutely. And you know what, to round that out, I would say even for retailers to think of ways of helping consumers feel like they're making more environmentally conscious, sustainable choices. And it's things like American Eagle or Levi's does a great job around repairs or resale, or Adidas just had a pop-up in New York City that was all around sustainability. And if you brought back items, it's like conscious consumerism, another one of those big buzzwords. You could purchase new items based on the points you are getting for bringing back old items that weren't even Adidas items. And they had partnered with ThredUp on this one, and you could use the app. So it was like so many different kinds of activations all in one, but it was Adidas's way of trying to get people to think about, I guess, resale in some way, right?
There does seem to be a lot of energy behind this part of the circular economy. Resale. In fact, we have a new forecast out for the first time on apparel resale, and we'll be doing a report on it very soon. Yeah, I mean, this is an interesting innovation. I think it's very much Gen Z led. So this gives me some hope for the future that the younger adult generation is leading the charge. And I think as you start to fast forward, you know, 10 years from now, when they are in the prime years of household formation and driving a lot of the consumer economy, that we will be much further along than we are today. The only question is, you know, how much has the climate declined over that time?
Right. And I think this is such a big topic today. We talked about one little component of sustainability. You know, we didn't really talk about the raw materials or the life cycle of the product from top to bottom, or even delivery is becoming a big component of this conversation. And is the quick commerce really making a difference, or is that adding extra carbon footprint into the world versus just doing plain old delivery? Packaging that comes with delivery. We talked about this last time, where one of our colleagues got a little bottle in a gigantic package with a lot of plastic to keep that little baby bottle safe. But that seems like a complete waste. I think one thing is for sure, Bazaar Voice did a worldwide survey and they reported that 15% of consumers would outright not purchase from a retailer or brand that lacked sustainability practices. So while it might not seem like you have to get to it, you are going to start to lose more and more people if you don't think about how to do it right, make sure that consumers know you're doing it, and talk about it without greenwashing, I guess, really.
It's a great way. I think we'll leave it there and segue into our next segment, where we're going to look at the top five most underreported trends in retail for 2022. Time for a quick word from our sponsor, Smartly.io, and then we'll be right back.
Hi to all you social media marketers out there. Listen up. Social platforms have become more important than ever for brands. You know this. So if you're looking to scale your social advertising in 2022, look no further. Smartly.io is number one in social media advertising. They help brands automate every step of the process by combining creative production and ad buying to unlock greater performance. To get the brand new 2022 social advertising trends report, go to smartly.io/emarketer.
All right, Susie, so let's talk about the top five most under the radar trends for 2022 in retail. And I think the first one builds off of what we were just talking about in terms of sustainability. So do you want to tell us what trend number one is?
Sure. Trend number one is carbon footprint. And I think you touched on it before when you were talking about meat and vegetable substitutes. I think this is one of those that is out there and everybody's talking about it. And there are even companies like MasterCard that are doing carbon footprint calculators to help consumers make different choices. We believe so strongly in sustainability that we think that this deserves its own sort of call out. The one thing I would tell you personally is I find this one a little bit confusing too, in terms of how do you measure carbon footprint and things like, you know, there was all this conversation around tote bags equals sustainability. And then there was a study that said actually tote bags are really bad for the environment and those plastic bags from grocery stores are better. Or, you know, there was the whole commercial from the Milk Foundation around how they have changed their practices of producing milk so that it is more carbon neutral. So I think it's definitely out there, but it's just so hard to define. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of why this idea of carbon footprint labeling is probably compelling is it's an attempt to quantify the impact. And part of why I think people don't know how to change their behavior is because, you know, being environmentally friendly often is a nebulous concept. So you quantify it, you make it something that's tangible. If I can compare options according to carbon footprint impact, then I can make a better decision. I'll say one place I've seen it pop up, not specifically retail, but in the airline industry. I now see different flight options according to carbon footprint. And I know that air travel is a big polluter. So that is a case where I feel like I'm making a difference if I can choose the better option. So I'll be curious to see if that labeling starts to be introduced into a lot more environments, especially on the digital shelf with consumer packaged goods.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. It's almost like an FDA stamp of approval, but for carbon footprints. I like it. I think our next trend, do you want to reveal the trend that we think is underrated?
Yeah, so the next trend, I guess, also in the consumer packaged goods industry that I'm looking at really closely right now is product sampling. I've talked about it a bit in the context of some of the growth in retail media networks, which are doing digital advertising from the retailer. But product sampling is, to me, like the next level of building that advertising and marketing platform to not just create awareness around a consumer brand, for example, but actually put that product in the hands of the consumer. And you can do it through e-commerce delivery. Amazon experimented with it a little bit in the past, and then they seem to close up shop on the effort. I think they're going to unveil it again in short order. And a big reason why I believe that is because GoPuff, sort of an upstart competitor in the grocery and packaged good delivery space, seems very focused on the product sampling initiative. I think they believe that that's a path to ad and revenue monetization for their company as they grow here. So that's why I'm looking closely. I think we're going to see some things bubble up a bit more. We'll hear about more initiatives. I don't think it's going to be widely adopted or get into the hands of consumers in a huge way next year, but I think it will foretell what we're likely to see over the next couple of years.
Right. And you know what? I think it's interesting because some of the legacy brands like Walmart were doing that very early on. They shifted to sampling and using smaller brands who wanted to drop their items in the curbside pickup bags. And I had read something around how that gave the brand, so it is monetization, that gave those brands a way to get first party data. Because once they got the sample, they knew where they were putting the sample. And if that person came back to buy the item, then you knew that that was a hit and it was worth that, how many ever cents it costs. Whereas when you go to Costco and you're trying all the different items and the like little tacos and the ice cream and the this and the that, there's nobody knowing really if it was worth it, right? Because we know how many items got sold, but we don't know how many people tried the item and then went and purchased it. So there's definitely something there. I feel like Walmart tried it. I don't know if they're still doing it, but it's how do you scale that?
Yeah, but I think you're right that it's all about the data. That's the intel that's super important for these brands. And to be able to not just understand trial of a product, but that residual purchase behavior into the future, you can start to get really compelling ROI calculations as a brand off of these advertising and marketing expenditures. Let's shift gears to a different category. Susie, I think you have a prediction for something that's under the radar in the apparel segment.
I do. I feel like we talk about size inclusivity and even color inclusivity for women a lot, but I think 2022 is the year where we're going to see that coming for men's apparel, where there is going to be a bigger push towards inclusivity, whether it's the mannequins, whether it's, I mean, in my past life, we talked a lot about whether all the different sizes should sit together on the floor or if there should be a distinct section for plus and petite and what does that look like and what is the right customer experience. And I think, you know, it already exists in men's in terms of big and tall as a separate sizing, but I think now there'll be just more conversation around that. Andrew, when you go shopping, I know you don't go to big and tall, but do you ever notice the big and tall section?
I don't. You know, I'm a medium in everything, Susie. So it's like the easiest thing ever. There's usually the most stock of medium and I don't have to even entertain the thought of small or large. So I don't know.
Right.
I guess it's easy for me that way.
That's true. But that's the other thing, right? The other sizes aren't sitting with the size that you always go and pick out, right? And so like that's not very inclusive. And I'm banking that 2022 will be inclusive for a lot of other retail categories, not just women's. Should we talk about our fourth one of underhyped things that retailers need to worry about in 2022?
Actually, when I tee you up for the fourth trend, I think this year we've heard quite a bit about the supply chain. Susie, what do you think is an under the radar trend that will affect the supply chain in 2022?
So I think I recently heard about this concept of the supply web versus the chain, which implies that one item impacts the next in a linear way versus the web, where if something's going wrong at the port, that could also impact other parts, not just necessarily the truck person who has to take the goods to the store or the distribution center. So I really like this idea of thinking about supply as a more integrated, holistic ecosystem and not just one step after the other. And I think what retailers are really going to need to think through is doing more dynamic inventory planning and what is a buzzword again is the smart warehousing. And we're starting to see that more and more. And we're off to the NRF show. And we're starting to see a lot of these AI sort of, you know, in the innovation lab, there are a lot of AI startups that are thinking through inventory planning and even smart warehousing in terms of robotics.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of innovation that can certainly help solve these issues. I think what we found out this past year is just how fragile the system is. You know, it was kind of a finely tuned operational mechanism that was working fine when you didn't have major deviations. And this is what happens when there are deviations from the norm, and we're seeing it in a number of different aspects of the supply chain. So it's all about becoming, going from being fragile to anti-fragile. And what does that mean? Yeah, and we probably do need to see the rise of a lot of new technologies to enable that dynamic planning.
Cool. And now our last one, maybe our favorite under the radar trend for 2022.
Yeah, Susie, this is all you, but it's all about retention versus acquisition. What do you think is going to happen?
Well, I mean, did you see, it was in our briefings actually, where some of these quick commerce are losing so much money on every single delivery because it's just not sustainable. And I think especially when it comes to direct-to-consumer brands, the traditional direct-to-consumer brands, they spend so much money to try and acquire new customers. But what we do know is that once you've acquired a customer, it's retaining them that's more important, because you want to get the value of how much it costs you to get them that first year. And I think shareholders and others are going to just be more concerned about the assets and the economics of how you're running your business. And 2022, and we've talked about this before as well, 2021 was about everybody switching brands, right? And so now it's like, how do you keep them? And I know you study this. So what are some of the tactics? How do you keep them?
Oh, I mean, I love it. So how do you grow, right? There's only two ways to grow. It's to increase the number of users or customers, or to get them to do more, engage more, or buy more. So retention is all about buying more. And that's really where the profits come in for most brands, when you don't have to keep acquiring that customer and pay additional marketing costs every time they come back and spend. I feel like we're kind of coming towards the tail end of the acquisition era, where it was just all about acquiring customers. But what's bringing this to a head in a lot of ways is, you know, rising acquisition costs on digital channels. I mean, you see how all of these brands, D2C brands in particular, are getting squeezed on the bottom line. They have to become more sustainable as a company. And that means focusing on retention and how they're going to keep those customers loyal into the future.
I think this is going to be a really good one to see play out in 2022 and beyond. So what do you think, we teased this at the beginning, what do you think is an overhyped trend that we're reading a lot about, but I don't know, is it really the right one to focus on in 2022 as a retailer or a brand?
Yeah, I mean, the one that I keep reading about is this idea of a super app. You know, I think the center of it, it has to be, I guess, what everybody is aspiring towards is WeChat in China, which is both a major media and messaging platform integrated with commerce, and people use it to buy food, groceries, everything online. This aspiration of a super app, I think, over in Western markets is not likely to come to fruition. You know, there was a rumor earlier in the year about PayPal acquiring Pinterest. The idea there, I think, would be about creating a super app, with Pinterest being the commerce-oriented media site and, you know, PayPal handling the transaction component. I just don't think you can mash two things together. I think it has to grow organically if it's going to become a thing, just like WeChat did. And I don't see the opportunity in the US outside of Facebook, but frankly, Facebook has enough issues going on where I don't think that they're going to be able to evolve in that the way they would hope.
Right. Well, and I think it just depends on how we define super apps in the Western world versus how they have defined it in China, because here there are rumblings around Uber and DoorDash becoming super apps. But like you said, it's just for them, it's just the adding more things you can do that are all sort of interrelated versus adding completely new things like communicating with your friends. Like you can't on Uber, right? You can order a car, order food, and now deliveries. So
it's missing the media component, and that's what drives the really routine engagement with something that I think allows it to get super app status. I will say there is sort of a super app that already exists, but we might be overlooking, and that is Apple. It's not an app, it's the whole phone and ecosystem that they provided, but they have kind of all the pieces pulled together already.
Oh yeah, that's true. Absolutely. You heard it here first.
What's your overhyped trend for next year? This year.
So this is the thing. This is the big reveal in so many ways, because I actually don't think it's overhyped, but at the same time, it's in every media outlet, on every radio station, in every magazine, on every Instagram post. So that's what makes me feel like it's overhyped. But it's this idea of the metaverse and the 3D web. I believe in it. I just don't know that it's 2022. I think 2022 is when the NFTs, the non-fungible tokens, hit it bigger. They've already pretty much hit it in 2021. But I don't think this idea around the metaverse and retail shopping, the way we're reading about it, will come ahead in 2022. And I'm pretty sure you agree with that, even though I'm the one always talking about, no, we have to cover metaverse in some way, shape, or form. What do you think?
So yes, I think there are many aspects of the metaverse that are being grossly overhyped. I think we agree that there are the underpinnings of something significant here. How it manifests over time, it's hard to know exactly. With the metaverse, I think there are the underpinnings of something significant. We're not totally sure how it will all manifest over time. I will say some of the early incarnations that I'm seeing, I don't find compelling in the retail context. I don't know, there was this video going around about Walmart shopping experience. Now, this was going back to 2017, but it was taking somebody through a store shopping experience. And I think the takeaway for everyone is, do we really want to model that shopping experience the exact same way in virtual reality? And I think the answer for most people is no. I don't need to go into a fake Chipotle to order my burrito. I'm fine just using the Chipotle app if I want to do that.
Right. Well, I do think, though, as we wrap up, as a retailer or a brand, if you don't think about engaging in some way that makes sense to who your customer is, then you might not be deemed cool enough, right? So it's like you need to find that right balance of doing something in that world and experimenting. I mean, like Forever 21 doing shops in Roblox probably makes sense for them. Will they generate a lot of business? Probably not. But is it somewhere that they can be sort of like capture them when they're younger to get them accustomed to it and then to keep coming to you, and so that you can have that sort of cool factor associated to your brand? I think that, depending on what brand you are, might be interesting to think through.
If your brand really matters to young people, you should maybe consider it. If not, I'd say you're probably safe pausing for the moment.
Absolutely. On that note, that's all the time we have for today's show. Thanks to everyone who listened.
We'll be back in a few weeks, February 2nd, with another episode of Reimagining Retail. Tune in tomorrow for another episode of the Behind the Numbers Daily, an eMarketer podcast made possible by Smartly.io.